Hi, everyone. Welcome to Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com, part of the unofficially named Wrestling Observer Podcast Network. I am, you might guess by the name, I am Josh Nason, the host of this very show, writer and editor on the website. Hopefully you guys are having a great week, and thank you for joining me. As always, if you've been along for the two-plus-year ride, obviously certainly appreciate it. This is your first time in. Welcome. Everyone's welcome. Episode 75, nice little milestone number. Well on the way to episode 100 at some point early next year, I would assume. And this is a good one. This is actually a great one, and one I've been wanting to do for quite some time. You know, you get some of these off-event weeks, and I obviously Mayweather-McGregor coming up. A week from tomorrow, as I record this intro. So some of these, you get to kind of these longer form things where you get to talk a little bit about people's careers and what they've been up to, and so on and so forth. And this is one of those weeks. So we did a really nice profile here, and the focus is, no pun intended, is Esther Lynn. She is an excellent. We talked about this in the interview. Doesn't really kind of define herself as a photojournalist or a photographer, really just kind of a storyteller. But you know her work from MMAfighting.com and Showtime, obviously. If you've seen anything when it comes to the visual representation of fighting and all the action in the cage, you have seen Esther's work thousands of times over. And this is one I've been wanting to do for quite some time, but obviously she's quite busy, so we're able to lock her down on on Thursday afternoon. And we actually talked for about an hour, and we hit a wide variety of topics. And let me go into a few of the things that we talked about on this very show. We chatted about really just kind of, you know, the backstory of her career, kind of how she got into taking photos to begin with, and obviously how she made that transition into taking pictures of people fighting in cages and rings. Just happened to be about 10 years that she's been doing that, so it was good to talk about that. Talked about kind of what she does for MMA fighting. She doesn't just take pictures, even though it's an amazing skill and something that she is an industry leader on. But really, there's other things that she does for the site, so she talks a little bit about that. The Mayweather-McGregor tour, of course, you know, almost like contractually obligated to talk about that stuff, right? Todd chatted about what she's seen on tour, some kind of the big takeaways and some of the great shots she's taken there, and also some of the some personal things. You know, she was part of this roundtable for both gay and bisexual sports media people that came out earlier this year, and we talked about that experience, as well as even a little bit of pro wrestling. And she actually was one of the photographers for New Japan's G1 specials that took place in Long Beach earlier this year, so we chatted about that as well. You know, self-serving to say this was a really great conversation, but I think this was a really great conversation. I think it's going to be one that you guys are going to enjoy. So without further ado, I'm going to let you guys to it. Enjoy this interview for 1 hour with Esther Lynn of MMAfighting.com and Showtime Sports. So in Marvel Comics lore, there's a character called the Watcher, and the Watcher basically sees everything in the history of the Marvel Universe, and this week's guest, in a lot of ways, is kind of like that in the world of combat sports. You know her work as a photographer for both Showtime Boxing and, of course, MMAfighting.com, part of the Vox Media family. The one and only, we welcome her this week to this week's edition of Josh Nason's Punch-Out, Esther Lynn, and Esther will... Yeah, you know, we'll start out with the really tough questions. I didn't really, you know, tell you I was going to ask you this, but what? give me a theory on what's going to happen with Game of Thrones this season.
Who? I've been thinking about it, and I guess this is not a very bold theory, but I guess Daenerys and Jon Snow are going to figure out that they're related.
Okay. Yep. I like that one.
And possibly still get married regardless. Because it's the Targaryen way.
That seems to be that seems kind of to be the big question of, because I think people really want to see them get together, but they also kind of know this thing in the background that they're kind of related in some parts of the country. I'm sure that that's allowed, but, and certainly there've been a lot of different things with the Lannisters and things like that, but as we're recording this, we have a couple episodes left. Have you liked this season?
Yeah, I actually have liked this season. It's moving a little quicker than previous seasons, which I enjoy.
Yeah.
Because before it's been kind of like painful to wait from week to week. And now at least enough is happening each week that I don't feel like, you know, that I'm like waiting for the next one and then disappointed when the next one happens and only two things happen.
Gotcha. Well, the reason I asked you about Game of Thrones, I was looking to Twitter the other night and just kind of, you know, getting some idea, kind of some other stuff you've been up to and so on. And you had mentioned something about Game of Thrones spoilers. So, I mean, it's a topic that the country, you know, we like to talk about when it comes to pop culture stuff. So glad to hear that you're glad to hear that you're on board. It's nothing more crushing than asking someone a Game of Thrones question. They're like, yeah, I don't really watch it. You know, not really my thing.
Yeah, I was on actually a music video shoot that day. I can't say for what yet because it hasn't come out, but, you know, it went very, very late and I was out in the desert and there was no cell reception. And obviously I was too tired. I was definitely too tired to watch it when I got back to my hotel room. And I knew immediately, I was like, it was a Sunday night. So I was like, you know what? I'm just not going to get online. I'm just going to send a generic, please don't spoil this for me tweet because I knew it was going to happen. And then the next morning I figured people would be kind of over it. And I was at the airport and I was just kind of getting ready to, I watch the MMA Hour every Monday because I'm also the engagement editor for MMA Fighting. So I have to kind of sit around and listen to it for quotes and things like that. And as soon as I signed on, there was a spoiler right there. And,
oh no.
But luckily I just blocked it out of my mind.
So I do happen to know what music video shoot you were on. I do know this. Breaking news. Yeah, it was the group that does Face the Pain. They're doing a remake of the song. So it's okay. Yes. It's okay to tell people that, Esther. At this point, we're all friends, you know?
You know, they've been UFC has been really wanting to re-record that for quite a while with a little more emphasis on the UFC part of it.
Yeah, exactly. Oh boy, we digress. So recently, there's so many things that we could start with, but I want to ask you about your recent act as a superhero, scaling the rafters, taking some great shots of Conor McGregor just about a week ago, and a very, very famous shot made its way around Twitter. You on a literally a rafter above. I don't know if it was the ring or above, really where he was training, but I guess, you know, we've seen skilled and excellent photographers do anything it takes to get the best shots, and you went up top. I want to say the impetus to do this, but what inspired you to take your life into your own hands and get some good shots of Mr. McGregor?
Well, so at Mayweather's gym, at least with the Showtime crew, we've got some ladders stashed underneath the ring. Of varying heights, most of which are higher than I was when I was climbing on the, it's like those were the beams that hold the bags up over the training area. So most of the time I will get on a ladder and go high up, which obviously is a lot safer. Although not safe still, with all those people bumping around. But, I wanted to get up high and I wanted a shot where I could see how many people were there. And, the producer for All Access said, if I could help you get up there, do you want to go up there? And I said, absolutely. Because she asked me, she's like, where do you want to go? And I pointed right on top of the rafter. And she was like, you want to get up there? And I was like, yes. She was like, okay, let's figure this out. So we looked around and she asked one of Connor's sparring partners. And he was like, yeah, I'll help you. But then he kind of disappeared for a couple seconds. So one of the guys that shoots the Mac Life, Colin, gave me a boost so I could climb onto the bag because I'm kind of small. So I climbed onto a heavy bag, and then from the heavy bag, I climbed onto the beam, and I just kind of inched forward because at first I thought the beam was about, I don't know, I'd say about 5 inches wide or 4 inches wide. So I was like, this is not a big deal. So I started to move kind of fast, and as soon as I started moving, I realized it was not stable. I mean, it is stable, but it's smooth. So I kind of almost nearly fell. So I started slowing down and I started inching forward and I thought, okay, this is going to be a great shot. But the closer I got, since Connor was actually hitting the bag that was on that beam, the more it shook.
Yeah.
And also I realized that there were so many beams because it's a huge lattice system. and so many other bags that no matter how close I got, like, there was always going to be some kind of obstruction in the photo. And so I got really close and I was disappointed to find that the photo I took compacted him a little bit. It made him a little flat because of how wide I had to shoot it in order to fit everything in and try not to get any of the other bags in. I just wanted to get up there. I needed a shot from above, and that was the highest point in the room. So,
yeah. Do you find, I guess, that because you're talking through your process there, and I think so many people now, and I've always wanted to ask a professional this, is that the rise of smartphones and everyone taking pictures of everything and apps mm-hmm. like Instagram and Facebook and all this stuff. I think that do you find that people kind of simplify what it takes to get a great shot of something in any medium? Obviously you're really heavily focused in combat sports and shot all kinds of other things, but just that maybe they kind of simplify, like, oh, you're going up there and you're just hitting click. That's it. Do you find that because that now everyone thinks that they're a professional, that they kind of don't really appreciate what it takes to be a true professional in this?
Sure. But it doesn't really, I mean, how I always look at Reddit, and there, you know, because I get mentioned, I have an account there, and I get mentioned every once in a while, and I'll respond to people, and it'll always be like, oh, but she shoots like 1,000 photos, so it doesn't even matter. She just picks one good one, blah blah blah. And it's like, yeah, I think people underestimate how much it takes to actually get the right shot, get a good composition, pick the right lens. And honestly, having an eye still matters, because I would say that for the most part, my cell phone photos are better than a non-photographer's cell phone photos. So
yep.
It doesn't, I mean, no matter what I'm using, I'm still going to know how to use it to a more accurate degree than anyone else, because that's my trade. So, I mean, this is my 10th year shooting MMA. So, I don't know. I think that there's so many people out there that think that it's easy or whatever, and that's fine. People will always think that until they try it themselves and realize that, you know, 1 out of 1,000 photos being good is not a very good odd. So,
right.
After any day like this, I come home with hundreds and hundreds of usable photos, pretty good photos. And the hardest part is really just paring it down to making sure that I only release like my favorite few.
You said you started 10 years ago when it came mm-hmm. to combat sports. What got you into shooting combat sports? Well, how did you get your start?
Randomly, I was, I did production stills here in Los Angeles. I used to work in commercial and like indie film production. Mm-hmm. And one of the companies I worked for asked if I had a camera, if I could shoot some behind the scenes stuff. So I did. So I brought my stuff along, and I had been doing some behind the scenes stuff and some stuff for like local bands and things like that. Just for fun. I wasn't in photography. I was in production. And my partner Casey, he got hired to do almost like a sizzle reel for Elite XC before it was Elite XC. Mm-hmm. And they needed they started putting stuff together, and they, you know, he needed some help because since I worked in production, I came along and I did some sound work and some camera work. And then he's like, hey, they're having a fight this weekend, you know, in a gym. Do you want to come? So I brought my camera, and I found out I was good at it. With the very first fight I ever shot, I came home with a pretty decent amount of fun shots, and I thought I did a nice job for it being my very first time shooting a fight. And I just enjoyed it so much. I mean, I used to watch fights as a kid, but I never really I didn't follow it. Religiously, you know, every New Year's, you know, the K1 Dynamite show, my family and I used to sit around on New Year's and watch Japanese television. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that we would watch. But it never occurred to me that was something I wanted to do until I tried it out and found out I was pretty good at it.
Interesting. So do you consider yourself a photojournalist, a photographer, something else? Or what? I guess when people ask what you do, what do you say that you do?
I don't know, actually. For a long time, I just considered myself a photographer. I have a hard... Oops, that's my dog. Hey, let the mailman deliver the mail. I consider myself a photographer because when I first started, my connection was more to the promotions, and so I couldn't consider myself a journalist, you know?
Yeah.
I worked for Strikeforce. I worked for Elite XC. So with Showtime, I consider myself working for a broadcast, and I don't side with either fighter. Before when I was doing it, I felt like, I had a responsibility to really only show the best sides of a promotion. So I would have said I was just a photographer before, and now I would like to consider myself a photojournalist, but, it's hard for me to say that I don't have any bias at all. So,
yeah, because you guys have made, and I say you guys, you and Casey, you guys talk about like Invicta a lot, and how you, and I've seen how you talk about other fighters and things like that. You're not in there's so many that talk in very black and white terms, but over the years, you guys have made friends with a lot of these people, and you've got to know them on personal levels. And yeah, I think that's a smart way to think about it, and that, you know, you're doing something, and you're sometimes you are trying to show a side because that's what you're trying to convey through the work that you're doing.
Right. I mean, for me, the main thing is telling a story. So if you were to ask me like what I consider myself, I guess I would consider myself a storyteller because I do write as well. And I do some video work and do some other mediums. Just not in combat sports as much, but, and I've done some commercial work still. I mean, I worked for Adidas for a little while and things like that. So it's something that I feel like more than anything, above all, I want to tell someone's story. And if that puts me in as a photojournalist, great. If I'm too biased to be that, that's fine. I just am here to convey imagery.
Right. Yeah. Well, when one of the things that I think is interesting now is that the way the internet works now is you do a Google image search and, you know, thousands and thousands of images come up depending on obviously on what you're looking for. And you often, you know, depending on how far down you go, sometimes you can't exactly cite or know where a photo came from. A photo gets on site X and you're like, wow, this does not look like it was originally theirs. And all of a sudden you see it on the original source eventually and so on and so forth. Is that, I would imagine that'd be frustrating in that. And I think sometimes it may be kind of hard for people to understand. This is you're putting your work out there, your vision, your story. And then when people take these things without accreditation, I imagine maybe early on, maybe you're more used to it now, but I imagine that must be just very early on. It must have been really tough. And then also I imagine to some extent now probably still is tough when people essentially rip off your work and don't actually credit to the original source.
Yeah, you know, it's a little frustrating, but at the same time, I mean, I get paid to do my job, and I don't make extra money off, you know, licensing or anything like that, since I don't own the images. Or at least I don't own like the Mayweather McGregor images, et cetera, stuff like that. I own some of them, but, since I don't get paid again, it doesn't matter too much to me so long as it's not, credited to someone else.
Right.
So, more just because, I hope that awareness of my work allows me to get hired for other jobs, and other higher profile things. There are a lot of things I would love to shoot. And I would hate for someone else to get the credit or whatever, just in case that leads someone else to be hired for something I would love to shoot instead of me, just because I want to be there and I like experiencing things. So more than anything, it's that. I don't get too hung up about people not crediting me. Casey's super mad about it. He goes around like hunting people down. For me, it's just, it's the work I make. And I guess in some ways it's it's my art and it's out there. And if someone wants to copy me or do it or whatever, then it's time for me to figure out something better and keep going forward and make more art. So
you mentioned wanting to shoot other things. If you weren't shooting fighting as much as you are now, what would you – actually, you've done a lot in your career so far. You mentioned bands and things like that. Would there mm-hmm. be other – what have you not got to shoot that you would most – that you really like, I would love to do this?
I think for myself, I would like to be able to shoot things that I think make an impact on the world. I studied documentary in college, and I think still that part of me would love to be able to tell the stories of people who don't have someone out there advocating for them or telling their stories. So I would still like to be able to go out there and, you know, do some more investigative or more, I'm not really sure what the term is, but I just want to be out there doing more life relevant things.
Right. So let me give you an example. So obviously this past weekend, a horrible news event in all sense of the word happening in Charlottesville. But it's amazing that there was a lot of, and I think with any tragedy and any just type of just horrific event, you see these iconic images, if that's the right word. And you see work like Vice did with their, that terrific, you know, 22-minute, essentially mini documentary about what went on there, and just really in the face of what was happening and this evil that was happening there. And you see these things, and I wonder, you know, you look at war and embedded journalists and embedded photojournalists that just give these amazing shots that give they give a voice to what's going on there for people that don't see this every day. And I wonder if maybe that's kind of what you're kind of talking about there, with that being like essentially real life just in front of you, and just, you know, just this amazing thing happening around you, and trying to capture that and tell the world, this is the story that's going on here.
Yeah. And it ranges from just like some, like a family story all the way to conflict. I'm kind of wary of saying that I would like to shoot in a conflict or shoot in war, because I feel like a lot of people go to that hoping to get iconic images or hoping to become part of that. And I don't want to glorify war or become part of it or do any of that. So there's no part of me that wants to become a war photographer for the adrenaline of it, you know? And I know there are a lot of people who do that. You can see there's like wide shots of where you can see like 10 photographers all lining up in the middle of, you know, a street fight, trying to figure out who's going to get the best shot. And it's just like, at some point, like, you should, I know we're not supposed to help, but also it seems just terrifying and terrible for all of us to be standing by watching something terrible happening. And for me, that's not what I want. But one of my favorite photographers, and I'm totally going to butcher his name because I never, for some reason, can't remember how it was pronounced, but James Nachtwey is one of the best war photographers out there. And he has a perspective of absolute compassion for the subject. And that's all I really want to be able to convey. And he's done all conflicts from, you know, from things in this country to, like, you know, documenting Katrina to actually being in Syria. So it's different for me. I would like to be part of that. Like, I looked at the photos of, you know, floods or the tsunami in Japan, and there are things that I just want to help out with. And even just like somebody in my neighborhood, and this is kind of crazy. So someone down my street was apparently beheaded.
What? Wow.
Yeah. I don't know, but I just like local stuff too. I would like to be here for, you know, to tell the story of my neighborhood and things like that too. So,
yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So you mentioned being an engagement editor for MMA Fighting, and that's kind of why I want to get you next, is this, this all-star team that MMA Fighting has built. But you do work for Showtime, MMA Fighting. Do you have a a full-time home, so to speak, or do you basically kind of like, I wouldn't say freelance, but contract and kind of just being able to kind of have that flexibility to float between different projects and not necessarily get committed down to one?
Technically, I'm full-time with MMA Fighting. I'm a full-time engagement editor and photographer there. But I was, I guess, loaned out to Showtime for this particular fight because I had a feeling this was going to happen last year. And so before I signed on with MMA Fighting full-time in February, I did mention to the person hiring me, and I wrote down in my contract that I should this fight happen, that I would have to be working for Showtime, because Showtime for sure would be the broadcaster. But also, I knew that I wasn't going to get the kind of access I wanted through MMA Fighting to be able to fully, to fully capture what I think that this event needs in terms of images.
No,
as
sense.
An outsider, yeah. So right. I felt like I needed to be inside of it. So,
so what does an engagement editor do then? I know you said you remember we talked before. You mentioned watching MMA Beat and kind of, was it like essentially cutting up videos and presenting them a different way? I know you say you do some different writing and things like that. What does the engagement editor do for MMA Fighting?
It's a really fancy way of saying social media manager.
I see. Got it.
But I basically, put together quotes and little viral videos or whatever. I cut clips out. I edit clips out from the shows or from interviews. And I just kind of monitor Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and I post to them. And, I've got a couple people that help me with that as well. But, for the most part, I'm kind of just, I oversee all of the social media stuff that goes out from MMA Fighting. So,
and you also, you and Casey have been doing some work kind of sparsely over the past couple of years, but with things like mixed martial arts, mm-hmm. ARFS, for those that are not aware, and probably a lot of people that are aware would have seen the one you did with CM Punk. Mm-hmm. Obviously, big fan for big guy for our audience and things like that. So mm-hmm. you also are doing some of these other, I believe, In Focus. Is that that's another feature series? Is that right?
Oh yeah, it's called Focus. Yeah,
Focus. Right. So mm-hmm. I mean, so some of those, I imagine, you guys just kind of conceptualize them and say this is kind of what we're looking to do and kind of I would say storyboard it out, but in a sense, kind of this is how we want to present it and mm-hmm. kind of go to work.
Yeah. So. Focus started actually because a couple of years ago we were in Brazil. We were in Rio for a fight, and it was actually Casey's suggestion. He was like, it costs a lot of money to send us down here. we should come up with something that makes it worth it for MMA Fighting to send us here.
Right.
And so he was like, you used to write, so maybe you should write something. You know, and we can do like a photo essay. And so I always really love the New York Times lens blogs. They have this really fancy interactive site where you can kind of click on a photo and you can hear the photographer's voice talk about how the photo was taken or the circumstances. And we didn't have the capability of programming the site differently. So Casey and I decided to try to do that through video. And so, yeah, we just started putting together images, and I would try to write a story of the week from my perspective. And that's how that started. And a lot of times that's how our series go. We just kind of sit around and go, I'd like to do this. How do I put this together? And we just pitch a series and start it.
Awesome. Take me through an event night. So UFC 213 that just happened with mm-hmm. Jones Cormier. What, I guess, actually, we'll start during the week. Take me kind of through your typical event week and working all the crazy hours that you do.
Okay. So with Jones Cormier, that one was slightly different because it was here in Southern California where I live. I had to kind of account for a commute time to the different places. Normally, you just kind of at a hotel within a few minutes of the event, but LA is LA, so everything is spread out. So the typical event week is, I'd say the first day is generally a press conference or a workout of some type. So in this case, it was a press conference, and we went to this place called LA Live. there's a Microsoft theater, and we shot the press conference there. And so I'm there maybe about 2 hours before it starts. They get on stage, I shoot the press conference, and then it ends. And then within the first 5 minutes of it ending, I'm sending out, 10 shots of the face-offs and for each pair of fighters, and trying to get out anything relevant in the first few minutes. And then wrapping up all my gear before somebody kicks me out. And then we kind of find a place to work on the rest of the material. So usually we'll walk over to a coffee shop or someplace nearby, and I'll sit down and I'll work on the rest of the images. And then when I'm done with that, I will sit around and make sure all of Casey's videos are getting distributed properly, and make graphics for them if needed and things like that. So the day, probably a press conference day, is generally pretty easy. It's generally only about, I would say, like four hours long. But in the case of that day, we actually were given the opportunity to interview Daniel Cormier at his hotel.
Oh, yeah.
So we drove down to Cerritos, where the hotel was. And then once we were there, we had to wait for him to finish his other UFC obligations. So I think we were there. We got there around like 5 p.m. And I think we did our interview around, I want to say 7. So we waited about 2 hours. We did our interview. And then, which was about 30, 40 minutes, I'd say, because we would go upstairs and we set up a couple small lights just to make sure it's not dark in the room. We don't really have like a big fancy light kit or whatever. It just has to be what we can carry. And then we did the interview. Then we ran into Tanya Evinger, who said she would also do an interview. And so I think we ended up leaving the hotel around, I want to say, 10 p.m. So that day started around 11 a.m. and then ended around 10 p.m. in Cerritos. And at that point, I had a lot of photos and other things in the interview to work on. Casey needed to edit the two camera angles together. Basically, we don't actually cut any parts out of the interview. We just lay them over each other, sync them, and then just swap between the cameras to make sure that the right shot is being chosen.
Yep.
But Ariel really likes the interviews uncut. So
what a deal, right?
No matter how long they are. So because he feels like it's just more honest. So we never actually get to trim anything out of them. We have to actually just leave it and just swap between the cameras. Every once in a while, you'll see like a random image of something, and that's to cover up me losing focus for a second and accidentally filming someone's hand or something. It's funny, we went around the corner from the hotel, from the fighter hotel, and found a late night Korean chicken wing spot and sat in there for a couple of hours eating chicken wings and editing videos.
Awesome.
And I think I got home around like 1 a.m. that night. So 11 a.m. to 1 a.m. For the first day. The next day was the media day and open workouts. We got to the gym around 10 a.m. We did our media day, had a short lunch. Then we had open workouts with John Jones and Daniel Cormier, which I think Jones was about half an hour late. So things got started a little bit later. It was supposed to end around 3 o'clock, but I don't think we actually got out of the gym until about 5. And then, what did we do? I think we drove home, cause I wasn't that far from home. So I just, I drove to a coffee shop and I sat in I drove to another coffee shop and I sat in a coffee shop and worked until the coffee shop closed at 10 o'clock.
Wow. These are long, long days.
Yeah. So I would say like every day is like that. And then now that there are early weigh-ins, so, we had early weigh-ins. So I was at the fighter hotel around 8:15 a.m. the next morning to the early weigh-ins, which are from like 9 to 11. We filmed a couple things around that. Sat at a coffee shop from 12 to 3 while we were waiting for the ceremonial weigh-ins. And I just sat there working and then went to the ceremonial weigh-ins. After the ceremonial weigh-ins, we filmed a preview show. And after the preview show, we finally drove home. So I would say Friday was probably 8 to 8. And then fight day, I got to the venue around, 2 in the afternoon, the Honda Center at 2 in the afternoon. And I think I left there around, not too late, actually. I think I actually left around like 1 a.m., which is not too bad. Wow. So.
That's a week. That's a week.
And then I edit. So some more, actually. I have to stay up with Casey and see what he's doing. So I generally provide support for anything he's doing as well. So I think we were up until like 3 or 4 a.m.
Wow. So it must be nice when, especially if you do these shows, on the road and things like that, and you must just get home and be like, wow, this is ready to sleep for a while and just kind of like chill out for a bit and no fighting, huh?
I really enjoy like weeks like this where there's only boxing on TV and I can just sit at home and watch it.
Right. Exactly. And occasionally you get to be in front of the camera. We don't see it that often, but you, I remember last year you did an episode of the MMA Beat.
I did.
And how did that come about? And we haven't seen you in front of the camera, or at least for the beat since then. How was that experience like?
It was nerve wracking. I am really painfully shy and very nervous and constantly worried that I'll say the wrong thing. I think because I just have ingrained in me that no matter how much experience I have in this business and how much I've seen, I've always got this imposter syndrome thing going where I feel like someday people are going to find out I'm a fraud and that I don't know anything, or the opposite, which is that I know all this stuff and I just have a really difficult time, verbally explaining it. Cause normally with focus, I get a couple of days to write and I sit through and I make a couple drafts, and by the time people actually hear it or watch it, I've generally had the material in front of me for about 2 days. So I've gotten to work out all the kinks, except for one time when I said death metal instead of black metal, and I feel like it follows me around. I just always felt like, I think especially also because I don't really see any other women, and definitely no other women of color in the business speaking as authorities, I have a hard time doing it. I just am afraid that I'm going to embarrass people.
I see. Yeah, no, it makes sense. And to that extent, I mean, imagine it must have been very tough. We're over a year past UFC 199 when, the MMA fighting crew, the MMA fighting three, so to speak, were unceremoniously escorted out, and the resulting kind of chaos from that whole thing. It was just a wild night anyway. And of course, we're all seeing this stuff kind of play out on Twitter, because a lot of us, obviously there are people there, but there's many of us at home seeing these things play out and kind of what Ariel was saying and so on. I imagine that must have been also very uncomfortable as well, because not only, kind of you mentioned personality, kind of how that works, and then being said, okay, you have to leave, but then also the fact that you and Casey didn't, and even Ariel didn't do anything wrong. You're just doing your jobs, and then you guys get lumped into it. Must have been a lot of attention and unwanted attention, I would assume.
Yeah, it was overwhelming. I luckily had already planned a camping vacation after 199, so I didn't even have a phone for a couple days. and when I turned my phone back on, I had like 2,000 notifications, and I turned it right back off. Yeah. Cause it was just crazy. And then, I don't know. I just do my job. I love my job. I don't really think it's particularly special beyond any other people's jobs. So it was really difficult for it to become this giant thing, and more than anything, that exact moment, like that I was being escorted out, there was like this, not so much embarrassment, but just I felt terrible. I just sat around just feeling awful for several hours. I remember I ended up watching The Three Amigos on television because it was on and I was just like, I can't go to sleep right now. I don't know what I'm going to do. I've never been ejected from anything before. and for not doing anything. So I didn't know what to do. And also we were, you know, I didn't know what to say because I didn't know enough. I didn't even know why I had been kicked out. So, I just kind of sat there and just absorbed it. And the attention was weird. I feel like I should say something and then it would help our case. But then I also just didn't want to speak to anyone. So. Right.
Interesting. Yeah. And then of course everything played out the way it did and you guys were welcome back. One of the other things that I wanted to ask about, as we kind of round the corner here was, and again, you mentioned kind of your personality is you did a very public thing this year, part of a panel that, one of your biggest fans, Richard Deitch, had put together from Sports Illustrated of media members that are out, that are either gay or bisexual and are out there. And, Dave Doyle from MMA Fighting was also on this panel, which I had no idea. I'm Facebook friends with him been for a while. I had no idea as well. And, I think it was one of these like kind of just like, oh, this is cool. Great. And in the community, it wasn't treated as at least from what I'd seen, everyone's like very supportive and seemed to be anyway. And, I imagine for someone that, you know, does not want to really put themselves out there this much that, this was kind of must have been a big thing for you. I was kind of curious about A, how that came together, and then B, the experience of going through that whole experience of having this out there in Sports Illustrated.
Well, you know, it's funny. Being bisexual is one of the few things I'm not particularly shy about. I think because when I was in college, I actually helped with a lot of queer music festivals, and I was very active in the community. So, as far as I was concerned, I was out and loud and proud. So, when I came into MMA, I just didn't mention it as much, just because, well, the environment's not that great for that. But it just, I was older, and I just was done telling people, I guess. And it came about because Dave Doyle got invited to do the roundtable, and he said he told me that he was going to mention me in one of his answers and asked if that was okay, for one, and then also if I wanted to participate. I said, sure, yeah, go ahead and mention me. I'm fine with that. And then Richard contacted me, and then I joined the roundtable. I was really excited to get an opportunity to do this because there's no platform, or I guess it's just not really a reason for me to go and tell everybody. But it's nice to remind people that, I'm a bisexual woman of color. It's nice to be able to like put that out there every once in a while and actually have a reason to say it. Mm-hmm. just to remind people that, you know, we're not, the MMA landscape is not a monolith. So,
yeah. And to give and to be an inspiration and to others that maybe that are younger, or maybe just like, you know, I see this sport as very machismo, and they're very, you know, especially some stuff that Dana White and used to say in the day, just the way that a lot of fighters, you know, still are, but to give them hope that I can work in this business, I can be in this business, and it's very welcoming. That's what I took it as, is it felt like other sports, you know, there's still a long way to go, but I think that it's more and more accepted now in that, you know, if an athlete comes out, a reporter comes out, Steve Buckley, who was also in the article, he is, he's been part of the Boston, where I'm just outside of, part of this framework forever. And when he came out, it's like, okay, you know, and a lot of media members like, yeah, we've known forever. He is a good friend of ours. And it just seems like, okay, that's cool. Interesting. And then if that gives inspiration to other people to be like, especially in a business like MMA, which can be so terrible in a lot of ways, if it gives people inspiration, say, I could be the next Esther Lynn. I could get to this and be accepted and have a presence in the sport. I think that's a really good thing.
Yeah, and I felt like it was just especially given the current climate, I felt like it was important to bring things back up and make sure I'm visible and put that out there so people know that you know that I'm out there and that there are many of us. And also I was really heartened by the fact that pretty much MMA, everyone in MMA was very accepting. And also that's actually one of the things that I was happy to share was that everyone that I've worked with in MMA has actually been very welcoming. People kind of shit on the fans a little bit, but for the most part, at least among the journalists, I've really found nothing but acceptance and love, and generally we're all pretty supportive of each other. So I remember the first time I ran into Dave Doyle, and we kind of, I guess, we found out about each other by accident. Yeah. We actually just bumped into each other. So it was one of those moments where we were both kind of like simultaneously mortified and relieved, you know?
Yeah.
Because it was just like, oh, finally, I've been really tired of just like not telling anybody. and it was just nice to have it out and to be done with it and just to be able to share it and now, put it forward. 'Cause there's gotta be more people out there who feel uneasy about it, especially in sports. And to know that especially the way the community reacted with such open arms, that it's okay.
A couple quick hit questions as we round the bend. With all this content you have, and I know there's some stuff you own, some stuff you don't own, any plans to do any, I sound old school saying photo books, but like anything else to kind of give this, you know, trove of content that you have, any plans to do something bigger with all this stuff that to let more people see your work?
Yeah, I would love to publish a book. I don't really know how to go about it, considering how the rights are kind of sprinkled all over the place for everything I've done. But I think with Showtime, I could probably, you know, release something through them with all of my boxing and my work for them. And then through MMA Fighting, maybe something through Vox or SB Nation could be done. But I do actually, up until a certain point, I think the Ronda Rousey fight was the first time I actually signed something that turned over the rights because I wanted us to a raise. Mm-hmm, yeah. I think up until then I actually own all of the work. And so I feel like I could put something up until that point, but it would be like, oh, I'd be missing some of the best stuff. So I would always I would actually really love photo books and I would love to put one out. I just don't know how that would happen. It's been a dream of mine. I collect photo books myself, so it would be really, really nice to be able to make one. I make annuals for my clients. So everyone that's hired me throughout the year will get a hardcover of collection of my favorite photos from that year.
Oh, awesome.
So I make about a dozen of them a year, and it just goes to the people that hire me. I didn't make one last year because I was too busy, but I also made a book, a newsprint book for the Mayweather-McGregor tour. I do this as a gift for the people that I work with. And then so everyone that I'm working with or anyone that works on the fight, they'll get a copy for free. And that's how I get around the whether or not I have the rights thing.
Yeah, awesome.
Because it's a gift. So just for people that work with the fight. And I think if it's possible, I might try to give a couple away with a shirt or something, or maybe somebody can buy one out of my trunk at the fight. Yeah, I actually love print. I have far too many books, and I would be really disappointed if my work never ended up in print. And the other thing is I would also really like to have a show. I've had some prints made very, very large for some people at Showtime and things like that. The work looks so good. It's just so nice to see your photo of, you know, 4 feet across, 2 feet down. It's just there's nothing else like it to get to see that. It's, you know, almost lifelike and life size. Yep. And I've always prided myself on making the images as close to the experience as possible. I would really like some kind of gallery show or some place where people could see the work large format.
One of the best pictures I've seen this year, best shots, was the shot you got from behind the fighters, Mayweather-McGregor, in Toronto. Mm-hmm. That was basically them just pointing at each other. And it was mm-hmm. just everything about it was so great. Out of this whole tour so far that you've been on, both with that stuff and everything else and with Mayweather-McGregor, what stood out to you the most?
So that was a really rough week not just because of the schedule, but because by the end of the tour, I had felt like I had heard enough of bitch. Yeah. and all of the just terrible things they were saying to each other. And I really wanted some more creative shit talk, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was getting tired, and it was really difficult for me to focus, because when you hear the same thing every day, it gets really difficult. And I actually missed the New York press conference, so I apparently missed the worst one in terms of what was said.
Yep.
Because I had to catch a flight to London. Out of all of it, the thing I did take, though, was just there's something. The whole time that I was doing MMA and I was doing UFC, I was also doing boxing on the side. And I've shot Mayweather's last five fights up to this point. And, you know, when the UFC did their 205 event and when they did their 200 event and all this stuff, and it was this big thing, I really held on to this fact that, like, people don't realize how big a big boxing event can be. Like, people don't really know how big something can be. Yeah. I feel like I'm glad that I was able to take that image in Toronto, and I'm glad they did have one stop that was outdoor, because all the indoor stops don't really show you the feel, and the light's not good enough. Not bright enough for me to be able to show more of the people in the background. And Toronto was perfect because it was bright enough that I was able to show the crowd with the same exposure that I could show Mayweather and McGregor. Mm-hmm. So you could really get a feel of how many people were there. And I was so glad to finally be able to convey to people it's funny. I keep getting all these comments on my Instagram like, hey, our girl is shooting boxing too, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I've been shooting boxing for 7 years. it's just that no one ever paid attention because most people follow me for MMA. But I've been shooting these big events, and I've been trying to get people to like see these epic things that I'm seeing. And it was nice to finally get to share that with more people now that Conor is, you know, just as big. I'm able to finally like share all these images with a wider audience, because I took, you know, some crazy images when I was at during the Mayweather Canelo press tour in Mexico City. The 30,000 people showed up to that press conference outside, and including riot police, which was another story entirely. Huh. I never got to really, not enough people saw those. Not enough people saw just how big some of these things have been. And I was really happy to be able to share that, to see people, to get that feeling. Because that feeling that photo gives people, that's how it felt for me. Like, I was, heart was racing. I was excited. I was hiding in a podium trying not to be seen. Like, it was just, I'm so glad that photo exists and it's there, and that image, and it is exactly what it looked like to me.
Final question. Are you a pro wrestling fan?
I am. I am a pro wrestling fan. I wouldn't say like I'm a diehard. Like, I don't know a lot about pro wrestling. I just really enjoy it.
You do. I've seen this. I've seen tweet about it a lot. And I know that I think it was when USC was in Cleveland. I know you saw. Were you part of the group that went to go see Shayna Baszler and mm-hmm. Ronda Rousey?
And Matt Riddle. Yeah.
Matt Riddle and everything. So, yeah. How did is pro wrestling always kind of been part of your part of your entertainment over the years, or did you pick it up at a certain point, or what draws you to it?
So I probably hadn't watched pro wrestling consistently since I was a child. You know, I had one of those soft plush Ultimate Warriors when I was a kid.
Yes. Yes.
But that was about it. And I probably hadn't seen anything since. And then actually, I think it was, I want to say UFC 142, if that was the one in Tokyo.
Okay.
Edgar Henderson.
Yep.
Two. Yeah. So on that show, Daniel Herbertson, who lived in Japan, he took, me, Ariel, and Casey, and my friend Dean to, a NOAH show.
Oh, nice.
And, it was so fun. I had never seen Japanese pro wrestling, let alone live. And it was just magical. To say that I like pro wrestling, I mean, I'll watch WWE every once in a while, but I just, there's something about, Japanese pro wrestling and Lucha Libre that, is grand because they're able to tell you a storyline without even speaking. Mm-hmm. And so from that point on, I was like, this is fun. I want to go to live wrestling. I had still had trouble watching it on TV, but, I went to a couple of Lucha Libre shows. My roommate for a while was Cynthia Vance, and she's a huge wrestling fan. And she had the WWE Network, and we would sit around and watch. And I just kind of got into it. I started going back into it. And honestly, I really enjoyed it so much because the few times I was able to bring my camera to some of the smaller shows, and also like when Stardom came out to Los Angeles, I love shooting pro wrestling because it's a little more predictable than MMA. So I know where to be. Yeah. Even if I don't know what's supposed to happen, you have an idea. And it's made for cameras, you know, it's made for the right angle. It's made to be seen, the emotions, the feeling, the stories, and just the crowd. And, there's a positivity that's part of the indie wrestling scene that I just don't get anywhere else. People are so happy to be there. Mm-hmm. It's nice. It's just like the whole different community. I really enjoy it because it's not like, obviously when people boo, it's because they're booing the heel or whatever. It's part of the storyline. But in general, people are so kind and so welcoming and very friendly. Everyone I've ever met at a show was very, very friendly and accommodating. And I don't know. It's just something I really enjoy because for everything around it too. So the wrestling itself, the absolute athleticism and the amazing feats and the beauty of it. And then also just everyone around it has been just absolutely sweet.
And you did, if I think I get this right, did you shoot either night one or night two of the New Japan G1 show?
I shot both nights, yeah.
You did? Okay, great. Mm-hmm. Great. And I mean, everything you've talked about, there was no better example of like all of that there. I mean, the crowd was insane. Obviously for Elvis seeing it on TV and everything, but they sold out in like, you know, just a matter of minutes and just the mm-hmm. amount of action. They were so happy to see New Japan. Mm-hmm. And then, you got to see some of the best in the world, mm-hmm. in a very small convention center in Long Beach, California.
Yeah. You know, my favorite thing about, Japanese pro wrestling also, is that they treat it like an actual sporting event. Mm-hmm. So, there's a press conference right after, and there's like a little scrum. And you go into this little media room in the back and somebody and the wrestler will come out and sit at a table and talk to you in front of a step and repeat, but talk to everybody and all the reporters and engage like it's a real sporting event.
Yeah.
So
much there's different.
There's something about it. Yeah. It feels it's totally different. And it's just really enjoyable. And the wrestling, of course, is just phenomenal. I'm most of the time actually scared for them because they just do things that don't look safe at all.
Exactly. Well, maybe someday you'll get to shoot go to Japan and shoot the G1. And probably I'm guessing Dave Meltzer has maybe suggested this once or twice before that he's been there to see this, but I think, New Japan, what I've heard, New Japan, especially like the Tokyo Dome and like January 4th, the big show is that is unlike anything you've ever seen. So that'd be awesome if you get to shoot that someday.
Yeah, I would really love to. The other thing I'm really gunning to shoot is PWG, just because I can never seem to get a ticket. But also because I watched some of the DVDs and while watching it, I could not get out of my head all of the perfect angles and the images I could, I was like, everywhere I looked, I was like, oh, I could put a light there. I could shoot this. I could shoot that. Like, I couldn't watch it without thinking about the shots I could be getting.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, Esther, you've spent almost an hour with us, and I say us, you and me, and this has been a lot of fun. Really wanted to get to know a lot about you, kind of where you came from and just your inspirations and all this stuff and going forward and a lot of your experiences. This has been great. So before I let you go, give you the chance to plug anything. Obviously, you have your Twitter account, All Elbows, A-L-L mm-hmm. Elbows. Mm-hmm. But anything else that people should check out or purchase or view or anything, the floor is yours.
Oh, well, I don't know, actually. I'm All Elbows on all the platforms, on Instagram and Twitter. And I just want everyone to check out the work that we're doing for Mayweather-McGregor on Showtime Boxing. And I don't know. That's really about it. I don't really have anything to plug besides just thanks for having me on.
Oh, this has been fun. Something we wanted to do for a long time and glad to have you. Esther Lynn, thanks so much for joining Josh Jason's Punch Out this week.
Thank you, Josh.
All right. Big thanks to Esther Lynn for hanging in for almost an hour. Felt like it was 10 minutes. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that interview. If so, let us both know on Twitter. It's good to hear from people. Tag me at Josh Nason, JoshNason, and Esther Lynn at All Elbows, A-L-L-E-L-B-O-W-S on Twitter. And obviously you can follow her on her various other social media platforms as well. And big thanks to Esther. That was awesome. Again, no events coming up this weekend, pretty low key. Mayweather McGregor coming up on Saturday, a week from actually whenever you're listening to this, probably Friday or Saturday. And we're finally going to get to this mountain and we'll see what happens after we get over the ridge. We'll talk more about this whole thing next week, but I'm glad to be moving past this. I think it's been obviously a fun thing to watch at times and cover at times and talk about at times. But I think for those of us who are really just focused on the MMA aspect of things and are kind of fine with the sport getting back to normal, I think we're going to all be pretty happy once Sunday hits, and then we can actually kind of move on and get to this next stage of what happens next in the world of MMA and kind of see what's next for McGregor. I think that's kind of the biggest thing coming out of this is, I would suspect that boxing is not going to be a long-term thing for him. If this Malignaggi thing happens at some point, great. I'm hoping not. There's so many other guys I'd love to see him fight in the UFC. Tony Ferguson being one of them. Khabib Nurmagomedov being one of them. Kevin Lee could be one of them if he wins this interim title against Ferguson coming up later this year. But I think we kind of need to move on and say, okay, are you in or are you out? And if so, when are we going to see you next? And seems to be a lot of chatter that the Nate Diaz fight could be next. And so that may be one of the reasons that this interim title was created. So a lot of your chess pieces still to move on the board, or if he even comes back at all. So that's another thing. Jeremy Botter and I have a bet over a beer. I think he's going to come back. He says he's not going to come back, and $100 million can definitely change someone's opinion. And we'll also see what physical shape that he's in after this fight coming in on Saturday, a week from Saturday. And, he could also have the world talking. I don't think that's going to happen when it comes to a shock the world type of knockout, but stranger things have happened. People have seen supposedly Bigfoot, UFOs, Loch Ness Monster. Conor McGregor could join that list with a victory over Floyd Mayweather a week from this Saturday. So with all that being said, I'm going to let you guys go. Big thanks to you for stopping by, listening to the sport. You can go in the archives of this show. 74 episodes before this, a mix of journalists talking about their careers. They were from John Anik to John Pollock to Jeremy Botter, Chuck Mindenhall, obviously Esther Lynn joins this group as well. Dave Doyle, who we talked about on the show, is on there. Who else? Michael Chiesa, obviously a UFC lightweight. Talk to him at some point. There's a slew, and as we get closer to episode 100, we will recognize those people appropriately. And I look forward to some more guests joining us in the weeks ahead. So have a great weekend. Thanks, Esther Lynn. Thanks to all of you. Until next time, this has been Josh Nason's Punch Out. And until next time, insert catchphrase here.